Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a really big question. How do you actually figure out what a share of stock is worth?
Yeah, it's a tough one.
We've got some great sources, foundational stuff, critical thinking, all trying to, cut through the complexity of stock valuation.
And it is complex. Unlike bonds, you don't know the future cash flows for stocks. The investment horizon is basically forever, and that required rate of return.
That minimum return investors expect.
Exactly. It's not always obvious what that should be. So our goal today is really to highlight the core ideas behind valuing these, well, crucial assets.
Okay, so let's dive in. At its heart, the value of a stock is basically the present value of all the future dividends you expect to receive.
That's the fundamental principle.
Our sources lay out the formula. Price today equals dividend one discounted back plus dividend two discounted back. And, well, you keep going. Theoretically forever.
And that's key. For a long-term holder, dividends are really the only cash you actually get directly from the company. Even if you plan to sell it later, the price someone else pays you. That's also based on their expectation of future dividends down the line.
Right. It always comes back to the dividends eventually.
It does. That's the ultimate source of value.
Okay. That makes sense for companies paying dividends now. But what about, all those companies, loads of them on the NYSE and NASDAQ that don't pay dividends? Like tech firms focused on growth. Why buy those?
That's a great question, really. And what it boils down to is the expectation.
Expectation of what?
That they will pay dividends eventually. Or maybe more commonly, the expectation is that the company will grow so much.
Oh, that you can sell your shares for a much higher price later on.
Exactly. These companies are often plowing every penny back into the business, trying to fuel that growth. So valuing them isn't about today's cash flow.
It's more like a bet.
It's kind of like a bet, yeah.
Yeah.
A bet on a future story, on management's vision. That makes these stocks often, much more sensitive to market sentiment and growth forecasts.
So deferred gratification. Got it. But for companies with maybe a more predictable path, our sources mention a useful tool.
Oh, absolutely. For companies with steady dividend growth, we can use the dividend growth model, sometimes called the Gordon growth model.
Right.
It assumes dividends grow at a constant rate. Let's call it G, forever. And importantly, that growth rate G has to be less than the required return R.
Okay, so what does that give us?
It simplifies the valuation nicely. The price today, P0, just equals the next dividend, D1, divided by the difference between R and G. So R minus G.
A much simpler formula.
It is. And it shows something fundamental. Your total required return, R, is actually made of two pieces.
Okay.
There's the dividend yield, the dividend divided by the price, that's the cash you get now. And then there's the capital gains yield.
Which is the growth.
Exactly. It's just G, the rate the stock price is expected to grow. And for many companies, especially growth ones, that capital gains yield, G, is actually the bigger part of the total return.
That's a really neat breakdown. So dividend yield plus growth. Let's try a quick example. Say a company has preferred stock and common stock. Both just paid a $2 dividend. Which one's likely pricier?
Almost certainly the preferred stock.
Why is that?
Well, preferred stockholders get a fixed dividend, usually forever in perpetuity is the term. Plus, they get paid before common stockholders if things go wrong, like in bankruptcy, and they get their dividends first.
So it's safer.
And much safer, generally. Their cash flows are more secure. That means investors demand a lower required return, a lower R for holding preferred stock. Lower R means a higher present value for that same $2 dividend.
Right, the classic risk-return trade-off. Less risk, lower required return, higher price for the same cash flow.
Precisely.
Okay, shifting gears a bit from the pure numbers. Our sources also touch on something interesting, corporate democracy. Politically, we think one person, one vote. How does it work in a corporation?
Yeah, that's quite different. In corporate democracy, the rule is one share, one vote.
So your voting power depends directly on how many shares you own.
Exactly. Which, raises questions about fairness and control. If someone owns 51% of the shares, they basically run the show. It highlights that while everyone might share in the financial upside, only those with significant voting power really steer the ship. And sometimes you even have different classes of stock.
Like with Alphabet, right?
Yeah.
Some shares have way more votes than others, or none at all.
That's a famous example. People buy those non-voting or low-voting shares purely for the financial return, trusting that the controlling shareholders, often the founders, will make good decisions.
So thinking about all this, what's a big takeaway for you, the listener? It seems stock valuation isn't just plugging numbers into a formula.
Not at all. It's really about understanding the expectations investors have, the growth stories companies tell, and yeah, even the power dynamics baked into each share.
It really shows that tension, doesn't it, between what a company is now and what investors believe it could be.
Absolutely. And different stock structures appeal to different investors with different goals and different appetites for risk.
Well, for you, maybe the next time you look at a stock, think about its dividend policy or lack of one. It's not just finance, it's strategy. It's a statement about the company's ambitions. What story is that stock telling you about its future? And is it a story you want to buy into?